Dr. Yakubovich, Radel Fall.
As I was saying, we were in such a mental state that there was no belief in our minds that there was any possibility of escape. The date, actually, I believe, was either the 7th or even the 8th of May 1945, and seeing that the war officially ended on the 8th, I really wonder what happened to those SS guards. We were in no fit condition to chase them. All we wanted to do is fill our stomachs and go to sleep. And I cannot believe that the SS guards did not abandon their uniforms and their weapons and just try to merge into the general population as civilians and gradually return home to various parts of Germany, unseen and unbothered, and certainly not accused of the atrocities of which they took part. One of the first impressions of the freedom that I remember was some Russian lorries driving by, and we were there slumped by the roadside, waiting for the world to start again, quite incapable mentally to do anything at all. And when they saw our striped tatar, obviously they realized they must have seen other prisoners, concentration camp inmates, and they threw us quite a lot of chocolate bars from their lorries. I don't know where the soldiers got them, whether they were supplied with these because this was so prevalent that starving population had to be given something quickly as they drove by. I have no idea how it was organized, but we were very grateful. On the other hand, it was a very unwise thing to do, because I believe several of the inmates subsequently died from the effects of suddenly overfeeding with rich chocolate on shrunken stomachs that can't bear the digestive requirements of normal foodstuff, let alone anything rich. Anyhow, when these Russian soldiers moved on, and they hardly stopped other than to give us a shout and a wave and some bars of chocolate, a Red Cross vehicle, I didn't use a lorry, I think it'd be called a van, suddenly arrived. And the people within it organized us into a compact group and asked us to wait for guidance. Then more Red Cross uniformed staff arrived and guided us to the nearby township, which unbelievably was Terezin. Quite amazing that we should finish within a mile or two this circular journey of Terezin, Auschwitz, Schwarzheide, Terezin. The first thing within Terezin, which by now was liberated and under Red Cross administration, that they did with us was to de-ice us, which meant going into showers, and none of us had much trepidation because our shower experiences of Auschwitz were way behind us now, and we realized we were free and the war had ended. Our hair was cut, we were de-liced, we were detoled off, and we were issued clothing to replace our torn garments. We were given food in moderation and told that we would be medically examined. And although there were 250 of us, we somehow dispersed. We didn't stay all together, these 250. And I personally came to yet another milestone in my journey because of all the people to finish in Theresienstadt, the war as well as me, was my mother. And I met her there after years of separation because my parents actually divorced and I hadn't seen my mother since before the war. Nevertheless, I didn't stay in Theresienstadt for very long. I was impatient to get on, get out, and get into ground. So I hitched a ride. Oh, I was issued with a Red Cross International identity card, which was at least quadrilingual: Russian, Czech, French, and English, which identified me as an ex-inmate of concentration camps and offered me free movement throughout the territories with no payments required of railways, buses or anything else, with a note on the reverse requesting Red Cross stations throughout the country to give me sustenance as required and so on. So I made use of this, hopped on the nearest available transport, and went to Prague. In Prague, Kolín. In Kolín, which is on the main railway line, I took a train to Klamovice and turned up at the front door of the friends I left 4.5 years ago in 1941 when I left Klamovice for the orphanage in Prague. Well, there was a lot of tears flowing because they just couldn't believe their eyes that I actually returned. And that was the end of my circular tour of Central Europe during the war.
Where had your mother been?
My mother married a second time a gentleman who was a banker in Moravská Ostrava, which is the second largest city in Moravia. And she lived there. I had a half-sister who was the fruit of my mother's second marriage. And she was born in 1939, just before the war. And my mother and her second husband and her daughter lived in Moravská Ostrava, which in German is Mährisch Ostrava, until she was not protected by the laws, and at the end of 1944 herself was interned into Terezin because non-Aryans married to Aryans with half Aryan descendants were seemingly protected for a while and didn't have to go on these transports. So she never got beyond Terezin, but they were eventually interned as well.
Could I ask you how you came to come to Britain?
My father, as we started the 39 discussion, you remember, escaped from Czechoslovakia via Germany, Belgium, Holland into Britain. And he resided in Manchester for much of the war. Although during the worst part of the war, he was posted to Northallerton RAF Hospital and became the chief surgical officer at that hospital, which apparently was constantly overwhelmed by flying staff who were injured in their duties. He then continued by being the chief surgical officer at the Children's Hospital in Manchester. And by 1945, after the war, he was in private practice in Manchester. On arriving in Klamovice, we were offered the opportunity to broadcast on the public network of broadcasting an appeal for identification, for getting in touch with the rest of the family. And my father, or rather the Jewish community in Manchester, heard about me on these broadcasts which they monitored, informed him of my survival. He got in touch with me by telegram and asked for me to be placed on the list of people who will be rejoining their next of kin resident in the UK. And in August, I spent about a couple of months in a convalescent home in Czechoslovakia. It really was a converted chateau where ex-inmates, young, generally young people, quite a few of those who were in the youth home in Terezín met there again, our little group. It was a baronial mansion, as it were, which was converted by the Red Cross for rehabilitation and so on, for maybe a couple of months. But then in August 1945, I think it was the 23rd of August, we were flown from Prague in converted, or decommissioned, I presume is the right phrase, Lancaster bombers to Crosby on Eden in the Lake District. It's probably Cumberland, and landed there and were transferred to another chateau, a manor house on Lake Windermere. And from there, from Lake Windermere, our respective parents, resident in the UK, collected us. Peter's father collected Peter, Felix's father collected him, my father came to collect me. This was in August 45.
How did you adapt to British life? With ease or not?
Gastronomically with difficulty, because I just could not eat. I clearly remember one piece of toast would fill me. I suspect my stomach was so shrunk that I just couldn't eat a great deal. For several months in 45 and early 46, my digestive system was out of kilter altogether. I used to have diarrhea and all sorts of problems. That's so much for my physical adoption. As for the rest, my biggest problem was the lack of knowledge of English. And father engaged, well, he tried to get me to Manchester Grammar School, but I was hopeless. I mean, he knew some of the tutors there and headmaster and so on, but James was, I think, the headmaster at the time. But it was quite hopeless, because obviously I can't take somebody who hardly speaks English. So he engaged an ex-history teacher, a fine old English lady, who taught me English by actually teaching me history, which was much more interesting than going through the grammatical route. And in January 1946, which is about 4 months after arriving in England, 5 months, I took the London matriculation exam in mathematics, German, history, geography, and English. And I failed in English. I got the other 4 subjects. So I repeated my examinations. They called it school certificate in the London Matriculation Board, no longer the London Matriculation Board, in June of 46. And I got through. But my adaptation to the British way of life was really learning the language, getting my stomach sorted out, and preparing for exams. I had no except belonging to a youth club where we played table tennis and basketball and things like that. But I didn't participate in any cultural aspects of English life at all for the first year or two.
Did you suffer any discrimination in Britain?
No, I don't think so. I somehow wasn't too sensitive about other people. Unless somebody was positively violent or extremely rude, I wouldn't have noticed. And people weren't either. They were neither rude nor violent nor discriminatory. And I had a fairly full calendar. There wasn't that much social intercourse, much of it because I couldn't communicate properly. And I was probably shy of not being able to express myself as I wanted to because of my linguistic limitations. There was no discrimination at all, except as far as education itself is concerned, where I was unable to get into the grammar school, although I was 17 years of age, so again, grammar school education. I was unable to gain admission to university in 46 or 47 because it was entirely discriminated in favor of ex-servicemen, even though I got high school certificate by then and all the rest of it. 90% of the new admissions were reserved for ex-servicemen, I suspect, or I was told. Father certainly put me down for medical school in Manchester, but there was no hope of getting in. And in late 47, I started on part-time education, and I couldn't get a full-time place. But that's hardly discrimination, because it was the modus operandi of the education establishment at the time. But ex-servicemen aged in their 20s, incidentally, were given preference. Having gone through the war, they resumed their academic careers. And it must also be remembered that in those days, less than 6% of the population went to higher education. So there weren't that many places.
Did you ever consider returning to Czechoslovakia?
Only as a visitor. My father at one stage considered going back, but by 48, Czechoslovakia lost its democratic government and fell from the frying pan into the fire. And there were very few people who wanted to go back to a communist Czechoslovakia. And until the Prague Spring, as it were, I had no contact with Czech people. But was it in 1968 that the Prague Spring briefly came?
It was, yes.
And we happened to be on holiday with the family in Yugoslavia, and I met a lot of Czech people there. For the first time, they were able to go to the Mediterranean or the Adriatic and so on for holidays. And then there was another long gap because the Prague Spring turned into a frosty summer and winter. And I visited Czechoslovakia for the first time post 1945 in 1991, I think, after the
Velvet Revolution.
And incidentally, since then, we've been there every summer for about a month. But not particularly because we are devoted to Czechoslovakia anyway. Certainly, Angela being Kent born wouldn't be devoted to the country abroad. But because we found it so enjoyable, and I went over my halls in Prague, and I played as a child, and this and the other. The people were welcoming. It was an enjoyable holiday. And we met up with friends who also revisited for the first time from other countries. This year is the first year we shall be going for 5 years and then back